Welcome to Configure It Done, the podcast where SAP leaders share real insights, proven strategies, and stories from front lines of major SAP transformations. Get inspired, get informed, let's get it done.
So welcome back to Configure It Done. A big theme that we've had in our recent podcast has been things like AI, RISE, BTP, the differences in greenfield and brownfield. But today we're switching and talking about something very different and very timely. So a trend that we all know exists in technology is there to be cycles with onshore and offshore teams and what that looks like. And we hear a lot of complaints about that in the market and how difficult it can be, but we don't hear a lot of solutions and how to actually do it well. So today I have Alison Arandez who's joined us. So she has over 20 years of experience in the technology industry. She has an incredible HCM background across SAP SuccessFactors, Dayforce, and many other technologies. And she is also the founder of Shin Jedi Consulting. So welcome, Alison.
Thanks, Bethany. It's lovely to be here.
You as well. All right. So the way this podcast came about is we were having coffee the other day and you were speaking to me about offshore teams that you've led before. And it sounds like you have this incredible methodology with how to make it work very, very well. And I know it's something that you really thought about and implemented successfully before. So can you walk us through the process for when you're selecting talent and you're onboarding talent for offshore teams, especially in SAP environments, which tend to be more complex? Like, what are the key qualities that you look for in team members? How do you go about that?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Bethany. And I think, I'm really excited to be talking about this today because it is something I'm very passionate about. People that have worked with me in the past, be part of my team, but also my colleagues, know that this is something that I, you know, value a lot in terms of building those offshore teams. So one of the things that I think is absolutely critical is getting it right. So the difference in the outcomes can be enormous if you don't get it right. And one of the first things that I'd probably say is that the way that you hire for hire locally is not the same as hiring offshore talent for SAP or any other product as well. So, for example, if you're trying to look at, I mean, another way, if I talk a little bit about the way that I've looked at this in the past, is that what we're trying to do is to try to build capability in our team. So what we want to do is look at what we currently have with our onshore team, what we need, where we have gaps that we need to fill. And we also need to come up with a delivery model that try to keep trying for it not to be too complex, but try to keep it really simple. So what it means is that, you know, the bar that, you know, how we select, how we onboard, how we set up the team has to be much higher than our standard onshore recruitment process. So I think in summary, with what I basically look for when I'm looking beyond the technical, because we know that the SAP credentials, they matter, but they're a given with everyone that we look at. And you would know better than anyone else, Bethany.
Absolutely.
So what it means then is that we look beyond the technical because, as I said, it's a given. And we expect that's table stakes that we expect that will be there. But there are three areas that we look for, essentially, is communication clarity. So that ability to communicate clearly. Also the accountability mindset and cultural adaptability. So to me, they're the three core areas when we're looking to hire, when we're going through a process of building and hiring for our offshore teams.
And what were those three again, if you could summarize it? So it was accountability, communication. What was the third thing?
And a cultural adaptability. So,
Which is important because they would be coming from different backgrounds and being able to understand the teams they're working with. Okay, so that brings me to the next thing that I was really curious about, which is normally when you're working with offshore teams, you're looking at very specific challenges that only happen in those global environments. So you've got time zone differences. Sometimes there's language barriers, which can be very difficult for everybody involved. And so keeping everybody really aligned and creating a really collaborative environment can be harder because of those challenges. So how do you look at that? How do you overcome those challenges?
Yeah, I think with communication side of things, it's important to establish that from day one to create some kind of rhythm between the two teams and even between the clients that we work with. So I think with some of the challenges, particularly around time zone, and you know, I've had that challenge for the last 10 or 15 years, particularly because we might be partnering, especially in some of the global companies I've worked for, we're partnering with our North America colleagues, we've got our Philippine colleagues, and we'll have an India team and an Australian team. So that is a huge challenge in itself. Something that, you know, working out the clock on Google doesn't always solve. So what we tend to do is that there's a couple of things. So what I always look for is it's got to be a fair process for everyone. So what we try to do is make sure that not one person or one group is always doing the witching hour, the crazy 4 a.m. or the, you know, midnight time frame. We circulate that. We rotate that so that everyone has an opportunity to have a reasonable meeting time. Now, that works for the actual internal team when they're working together. When it comes to actually working with the clients, particularly, you know, I've done a lot of work in the ANZ market where we've had offshore teams. It's important that when we hire for people in our offshore teams that they understand that there will be have to be some flexibility in terms of start times. So what we try to do is we don't try to make them work, you know, really early times like 4 a.m. all the time. There's a rotation. So we get them to do a period of time and we ask them that up front during the interview process to make sure they're comfortable working that, because we want to take into account people's personal circumstances if they've got kids or elderly parents are taking care of. So it's really a two-way street. We try to be empathetic, I guess, with our team, with our clients, and with other onshore team members in other regions. So it's about just making sure that we're transparent and upfront about it, so that people don't get surprises when they join us that they're working a 4 a.m. shift for 3 months, for example.
Absolutely. And that's something that I've seen overlooked with some of the customers that I've worked with in the past, where they, you know, maybe I was unaware that it's a global program, or they'll completely skim over the details because they don't realize or they take for granted what a challenge that can be, especially in SAP. So we've got we haven't found a more gracious way to say this, but we have an aging talent pool in SAP, which means most everybody that we have is going to have children, maybe older children. I've got some brilliant leaders that I work with and consultants that I work with that have grandchildren that they look after as well. And so if they're not aware from the get-go that they're working in a global environment and that they're going to have some funky hours to contend with, then the chances of them leaving a project midway through are really high. So you completely agree. Communicating that from the get-go is really key.
Yeah, and that's the same with the offshore teams. A lot of them, particularly the countries we've worked with in the Philippines, India, you know, they are taking care of elderly parents, and so they need to be available as well. So we try to offer that flexibility. But it's all about being upfront and honest, I think, at the start.
Very true. The trade-off for programs like that is often that if you have an offshore team, I'm not sure about your experience, but in my experience, normally an offshore team means that it's a large enough program and is often global and therefore really interesting, looks incredible on your CV.
Yeah.
Often, not always, but oftentimes you're dealing with more up-to-date technology too.
Yeah.
Sometimes the way offshore teams come about is we couldn't find the local resources here in Australia that had the talent. And so there's so many trade-offs and benefits for it, but it's just you have to be aware from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't have an infinite pool here in ANZ, unfortunately.
Especially now. We have more SAP programs that are kicking off this year than we anticipated. And we're going to get to the point very soon where we're not quite sure where the talent's coming from. Yeah. So that's coming. Yeah. So when we're looking at which strategies you found to be really effective for building trust, because trust is huge when you've got offshore teams, you can't always see what the other person's doing. When there's cultural differences, you might not communicate what you're doing in the same way. So building trust is really key. And maintaining a high morale for offshore teams is really key.
Yeah.
How do you tend to foster a culture of trust and high morale?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Another really important point that often gets overlooked, because often, particularly with offshore teams, they're not always visible in front of the client either. So I've worked in organizations where they were behind the scenes, but what we soon discovered is that there's so much talent there, and they wanted to grow into a more leadership type role. So we wanted to give them opportunities to be more visible, both to the other team members and also to our clients. So I think what I found works in terms of, which sounds good in theory, but it does actually work. The first thing is about visibility. So, and that's in both directions. So giving visibility for the offshore team in front of the client to take a lead role on some of the projects that they're working on. It's not always behind the scenes. For an organization I just recently left, we did that. It was a quite a large Philippine implementation. First time SuccessFactors Cloud was implemented, or cloud was implemented in the government. And what we ended up doing was actually making the leads part of our offshore team. We actually don't really use that word a lot in the past when I've worked, you know, building these teams. You know, I like to think of the team members all being part of the one team. They're just in a different geographic location. So I think it's important, particularly because the bulk of the work we do is remote. You know, the offshore team, they can become, you know, visible to the client, to the team. So what we do is we try to get them in front of the client, get them visible, you know, to the fellow team members. And I think that makes a huge difference in that recognition, particularly those that are taking on more responsibility by leading programs of work or leading streams in some of these implementations. So, you know, other things like, you know, getting some of these leads in front of steering committees. You know, some of them are quite afraid or perhaps weren't super confident in their ability to attend a steer co. But we, you know, you'd be surprised. You know, you have the right person, you give them some support, build up their confidence, they know their stuff. So getting them in those sorts of environments will help them with their progression as well. So that worked wonders.
That's right. I've never heard that before. I've been doing SAP recruitment for 8 years and I've not heard of a leader speaking about getting the offshore team in front of the steering committee to really raise their confidence. And when you're not visible, it becomes very easy to place blame on you. It's basic human psychology. There's not much that we can do about it. So finding every way that we can do to mitigate the risk is important.
We spoke
at the beginning about traits. So when you're first interviewing candidates like that, what traits are you looking for in interview that you can see being transferable to them being able to get in front of a steering committee later become a lead later if they're given that opportunity?
I think, you know, quite often, you know, as well as their background and experience, you know, especially if we're looking for someone to be a lead on a project and they're based offshore, I actually look for accountability and ownership. So even if at, you know, even if they were doing config or they were, you know, a senior consultant, not a lead on a project, for example, that accountability and ownership, I think, is really important. If they've shown that at whatever level they've worked at, they're really good signs, and it's signs that you can build on. And all they need is a bit of boost of confidence that, you know, put it in a situation and support them to actually, you know, do the job and do it really well. And we found that recently. I know what you mean. It's not common to have a lead offshore. The project was a Philippine client, so you know, made it a bit easier because they were actually the bulk of the team were based in the Philippines, complemented by a strong onshore team in Australia as well. But we put them in front of the client all the time, and you know, they delivered. They delivered beyond what any of us thought they would, and not because they weren't capable. I think because they weren't used to actually representing, being the key representative of a particular project. So they're outstanding. Yeah. So I think it's that those traits of, you know, the accountability, ownership, really that willingness to give it a go, as long as they're supported. And I think that support is crucial. Not throwing them under the bus, you know, defending them if something goes wrong. And we all know that there's always things that go wrong in big projects. Timelines, integration, all sorts of things. So, and being able to support them, you know, when the client's not happy about a particular thing or the other team members are saying, you know, we just don't want that blame game. I think if they've got the support, they have the confidence to keep going.
100%. And all of this is really important too when we look at things just from a statistics perspective. So we surveyed our clients recently this year to find out what their current setup is. So we found that 36% have everything within Australia, but then almost half the market was half-half. So they had half the team onshore and half offshore, which makes all of this even more important in terms of collaboration. And then 21% had their teams completely offshore, which means if they're still reporting back to head office here in the ANZ region, it's still important to have all the accountability pieces, make sure you're hiring the right people. All of that becomes even more important because it's common.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one other point there too. I think it's also about that whole connectedness. And I think having those regular meetings, I know, you know, in typical project environment, you have your stand-ups, but I think it's important, project aside, having those one-on-one with leads and managers that are managing these offshore teams when they're based overseas. Because, you know, if you know, I'm based in Melbourne, so it's easy for me to meet with teams in Melbourne or, you know, in Australia. But I think it's absolutely critical to have those either in person. I was fortunate enough to travel a fair bit and meet all of our teams in India, Singapore, Malaysia and the Philippines. I can't emphasize how important that is to have that regular face-to-face as well as that touch point on a regular basis, just to check in and make sure they're feeling okay and, you know, that they feel supported.
It's very true. If there's anything that the lockdowns taught us, especially here in Victoria where you and I live and we had the world's longest lockdown, was how important the face-to-face interaction is. A trend that we're seeing with our clients in terms of face-to-face is most of them are back into the office a few days per week. So we now recognize the flexibility. A lot of us want to work from home, but when it comes to actually meeting your team, seeing them face-to-face, seeing the whites behind their eyes, like you have to be there. Yeah. We found quite quickly that there's no way around the level of connectedness that that brings. There's nobody to replace it.
Yeah. You can't replace that. I think it's, I mean, we all love working remote. I've been doing that for 15 years. So, but the other spectrum, I think there's a lot of people that actually prefer that face-to-face. You know, it's, you seem to get more traction on things when you've got, you know, people in a room. Being able to, you know, read each other's body language and all that sort of stuff and also connect physically, you know, face-to-face. So,
100%, yes. Okay, so we've covered things like traits, how to manage effectively, how to keep your teams onshore and offshore involved together and how to foster a really positive culture. So when we're looking at things like measurement, and optimizing their performance and looking at KPIs or tools that you might use to track everything. What do you tend to do there? Is there anything specific that you use?
We do use tools. Recently when I, you know, worked as, for an SAP partner, we use as SuccessFactors. But we actually use the same tool and we use the same process for all of our team. So we don't differentiate because they're all part of the one team. Some of the processes internally within country might be different, and that's probably more on payout and, you know, if there's anything legislative that needs to be taken into account. But in terms of performance, we would do our regular check-ins, you know, fortnightly, monthly, quarterly, annually, as needed. So and we'd get feedback from informally from clients. We get feedback from their peers, from other management, but we would do that right across the board. So I always try to keep it fairly, you know, straightforward and standard across the board. So we weren't trying to sort of pick up on things specifically about our offshore team compared to our onshore. We tried to always keep it. And that was more of our organization preferred to do it that way, to keep it fair right across the board. So, and that worked well for us. And it was, I think, because it was seen as being quite evenly spread, the process, it wasn't sort of picking out any particular country or team in particular. So I think that, to me, it's all about being part of the one team.
Absolutely. So that goes without saying then that any measurement tools that you'd be utilizing, you've been able to get them in every country. They've been available.
Absolutely. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. We all use the same tool.
Love it. Good. Okay. So last question for you. So when you're looking back at, there's many, but when you're looking back at some of your most successful offshore team initiatives, are there any common pitfalls that you've encountered, any common issues that you've encountered? And if so, how did you actually overcome them?
Yeah, there's been a few and you learn from them, ideally. I think some of the pitfalls, when I first was actually building offshore teams, because we realized that we just couldn't get the people we needed on particular projects, or the client was in Southeast Asia, for example, and wanted local people. It's about actually making sure that there's someone to meet with them face to face, or we have we make sure that we've got a broad range of people involved in the interviewing process, and even when we're welcoming people into the team and working with them, it's about, I think, if we, particularly the ones that where they're not really visible in front of the team or the client, they're sort of sitting behind the scenes doing, you know, your config, your testing, all that sort of stuff. It's always to do a check-in, because what I found is that it's more to make sure that, okay, we're all working remote in our organization, with maybe 1 or 2 days in the office every now and again. However, because they're overseas, and if we didn't have a full-blown office there, they were all working remote. So it's making sure that we connect with them on a regular basis, because I think sometimes people feel a bit disconnected from the rest of the team, and then you have communication issues, and then you have, I can't get a hold of that person, and, you know, they start to lose that connectedness. Morale starts to drop. So I think making sure that there's always a connection point between the offshore team member and either another team member, whether it be onshore or another manager. So we always made sure that there was some sort of connectedness going on there. And I think also just making sure, in terms of career development, making sure that there were career development conversations as well. Because sometimes, you know, we don't know until we ask whether someone is actually wanting to, they might want to move to Australia or New Zealand or Singapore. So having that open communication about the career, I think is great, because that way we want to retain people. We always want to retain people, and that's always a challenge. It's always been a challenge. So I think if you do the right thing by talking to people about what they want, do they want a career in this organization? If they do, then there's opportunities, you know, to progress into a leadership role or a totally different area if that's what they want. So I think being upfront and setting those not only goals but the career plans for them, and helping guide them and showing them that there are other opportunities, I think that helps with actually retention as well, which is always another hot topic.
It is another hot topic.
Yeah.
We're all preparing as a team right now. This is slightly off topic, but we're all preparing as a team right now because we've been incredibly busy through December and all the way through to January. And that's normally a very good indicator of a busy year. We're also tracking all of the SAP programs or smaller projects. There's a lot of HCM projects that are kickstarting this year or are in planning phase and will start next year. And it's, I mean, quadrupled, if not more. And so we're fine right now. The ratio of kind of candidates available to projects is good. Yeah. And that's not going to last for very long.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Retention will become key.
Yeah. And it is. Yeah. And I guess that kind of makes you realize that, like, particularly with skilled people, skill level too, is making sure that if you don't have enough work in one particular area, can someone cross-skill into another area? Can a project manager on a HCM one do S/4HANA, or can they do something else? So that falls into that career development topic as well. So looking to where you can have people skilled up and ready to move on to something else if you don't have a particular project ready for them. So we always tried to have in, you know, my past companies, multi-skilled, multi-certified people, so that they've got some surety that, you know, they can move on to something else if we don't have something in this area. So I think that's another pitfall. That all ties into the whole retention topic, I think, as well.
It does. And if I can just say, I mean, we've worked together across multiple organizations that you've worked for in the past, and every team member that's worked with you has raved about your leadership capability. So I know that you're great at the retention piece and the cross-skilling and everything else. And that comes from proper leadership. Yeah. It really does. Well, thank you so much for coming on our podcast.
My pleasure.
And for anybody watching, if you want to reach out to Alison, I will ensure to give out her contact details. And again, Shinjadai is her consulting firm for all HCM needs.
Thanks, Bethany. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, as always.
You as well. Thank you.
Thank you.